Good morning and welcome to Hour 2 of the Bible Study here on listener-supported KFUO Radio. KFUO Radio is a broadcast ministry of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod. I'm Roland Lettner. Thanks for joining us this morning. And pressed into double duty, indentured servitude, the shackles will not be released for yet another hour. Staying with us is Pastor Tim Ostermeyer from Hope St. Anne. Thanks for sticking around. We have another pastor scheduled, but sometimes things come up in the lives of pastors. And you know, the brilliance of the operation here at KFU, you lock the door, you can't get out, so you may as well sit down and talk to me for another hour.
I don't know what I'm going to say. I only had an hour's worth of things to say, and I'm all out of talk about.
I am dubious as to that. I think you could go...
Be nice.
Well, we could talk. Now, I mean, you've not been on Ask the Pastor before.
I have.
Well, yeah. not for a while.
It's been a while.
And you know, this is the sort of the freewheeling end of things where we sort of pick things out of the news or things in the church calendar or whatever it may be. Listeners may very well have questions or comments. They can email in at kfuo@kfuo.org. Or even phone in with the numbers 314-505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. And here is an example of an email. I'm glad you stuck around because this actually relates back to what we were talking about in Exodus chapter 17 in the last hour. It's from Eric, who by way of his iPhone has sent us this. He says, here are some Lutheran examples of lifting up hands. We talked about that with Moses and the battle against the Amalekites. He says, this is an excerpt from Evening Prayer. Let my prayers rise before you as incense, the lifting up of my hands as the evening sacrifice. Also, when Pastor pronounces the benediction.
Certainly, yeah. And I do that each and every Sunday. I'll raise up my hands and announce the benediction at the end. Yeah, it's and that's good. I'm glad that's pointed out. And what's great about being a Lutheran is that everything that we do... or let's say everything we believe, teach, and confess is based on the Scriptures, and it's nice to go back to the Scriptures. One of the things in there that I had to kind of chuckle at, let my prayers rise up as incense to you. Lutherans don't use incense in church. I remember as a SEM student walking into the chapel, I think it was on a Wednesday, and as soon as I hit the door, I smelled incense. And it was the very same incense that I remembered from being a Roman Catholic kid. And immediately, what was my knee-jerk reaction? I went, what, are we turning Roman Catholic? Incense is not a Roman Catholic thing or a Presbyterian thing or a Baptist thing. It's a Scripture thing. They would burn it in the temple, and it would as a gift to God. It was expensive. It was an offering that was put on the fire, and it was very, very good smelling. And in this world full of the stench of death and sin, that must burn, you know, symbolically burn the eyes and the nostrils of God. To burn incense, something flavorful, something nice smelling in the temple of God, a pleasing aroma to Him. But our prayers rise up as incense, a pleasing aroma into the nostrils of God. Once again, so we lift up our hands in prayer, and prayer is like incense, a pleasing aroma into the nostrils of God. That's so beautiful, and it comes from the Scriptures. Scriptures.
Continuing on with that theme, now here you go. This is a double treat for you, Pastor Ostermeyer. Not only do you get me, Roland, but you get callers named Roland as well.
I don't know if we can handle two Rolands at one time.
Roland squared this morning. Good morning, Roland. Thanks for the call.
Good morning, Pastor and Roland. I had two questions for you, sort of. You were talking about Moses holding his arms up, and the battle was going in the Israelites' favor, and when his arms went down, it was the other way. But it kind of sounds like a church picnic, and we got a tug of war. That's what it looks like. But there were actually men dying with
you
the
bet.
Sword. Not so. Were the Israelites dying when they weren't doing so good?
Absolutely.
And were they going to heaven then because they we're following the orders of Moses and fighting the Amalekites? Is that hold to that? That would be their faith, showing their faith.
Well, that's a good question. Are we saved through faithful service to Moses, or are we saved through dying on a battlefield when someone sends us out? You know, how the people were saved back then is no different than how people are saved today. By faith. Mm-hmm. By faith. By faith, not in Moses, but faith in Yahweh, the one true God, the only true God, trusting in Him for that salvation. The grounds and the basis goes all the way back to Genesis 3. From the seed of the woman will come the one who will crush the head of Satan. And to trust in that God, to trust in His promise of redemption. And those who believed God, it even says of Abram in Genesis, Abram believed God and it was credited to him as righteousness. So it's always by faith in the one true God. And those that that died in faith, it wasn't their service, but it was faith and faith alone that always saves.
My second question is concern these aborting little babies that are female, little girls. And in Job, the first part of Job, it starts out where Job was such a righteous man, and he even made sacrifices for his sons in case they messed up during the year somewhere or another. And then at the end of Job, the last few verses, it tells us about his children that were born to him again, and that he gave, and then it talked about his daughters being so beautiful, and that he gave them equal portions with his sons. Did Job or something happen there between chapter 1 and chapter, the last chapter, that he took a different view of girls? little children. Other than what he used to? That's my question. And I'll leave you with that. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Roland. Good hearing from this morning.
As far as giving an equal share to his daughters over his sons, the custom was never to leave anything to your daughters. Women in that society, even a wife, did not receive the possessions of the man. When a husband died, the property went to his oldest son or to his sons. The wife couldn't own anything. This is why even in Jesus' day, when he comes into the town of Nain with his disciples and they meet a funeral that's heading out of the city, the widow of Nain, now the widow of Nain, which means she has no husband, and they're carrying out her only son. This is huge. The mercy that Jesus shows by raising this son from the dead wasn't toward the son. It was toward this widow who just lost her only son, which meant she doesn't own anything anymore. If she didn't have family to take her in, she was destitute. She had no property. She had no income. That in itself points to the way that women were in the society in that way. So when Job suddenly says he's leaving an equal share to his daughters, this is huge. That's unheard of. Might have even been illegal. I don't know. But that's just really, really doing something that was extraordinary for the people of those days.
Yeah. Well, joining us now, you have found relief, Pastor. You have been the captive is now set free, thanks to Pastor Dave Andrews joining us. Dave, how are you?
I'm fine. How about yourself?
Yeah, I've never seen such a smile on Pastor Ostermeyer's face as when he saw your name on the screen. Well, Pastor Ostermeyer, thank you for those extra few minutes. Be sure you see Jenny on the way out. She'll drop a couple of extra shekels in your purse.
I'm smiling because I think the world of Pastor Dave. Pastor Dave Andrus, he does great, great work, and I'm delighted that he's able to come in here and spend an hour with you guys.
All right. Well, here's the key to let yourself free.
Thank you.
Blessings to you both.
Thank you, my friend. We'll talk to you again soon. Well, how are you, my friend, Pastor?
I'm doing well. I had somebody in my office, actually an intern, who's in one of the local churches, come by and was interviewing me as part of the step one of their learning the community, the church, and the church's connection with Lutheran Blind Mission.
Oh, well, that's cool.
Yeah, and so we just got carried away talking. I can't imagine.
Well, I'm glad you weren't doing something trivial like saving souls or anything like that.
Well, not at this moment, but always with that in mind.
Well, Pastor Dave Andrus, as he mentioned, is the executive director of Lutheran Blind Mission. Have you completed the move to your new office?
I am in my new office sitting at my desk. Yes, indeed.
So is it set up like your old office, or do you have to learn a new topography?
Completely new, and I'm bouncing off of that file cabinet. I still don't got that corner quite mastered.
How long does it take? Now, one thing that I have to say is very impressive. If you invite Pastor Andrus to come and preach at your congregation, you learn the layout of the altar and where everything is very quickly. And how long does it take you to get used to a new space to orient yourself?
First, in case we have any new listeners listening, I am totally blind, and have been blind for about 40 some years. In churches, I can do within about 5 to 7 minutes. They're usually 3 to 4 different styles, and I just have to understand: is this going to be the traditional? Is this mid-50s? Is this the contemporary? Or the fourth one is usually something totally radically different. And every once in a while I bump into those. And so it's just a matter first of identifying that and then pacing things out. Chancels are not too bad because there's usually a lot of room in between things. Where we are here, we in this space we have 1, 2, 3, 4 little offices with a lobby, and it's not a very big lobby, and it's kind of packed full, so you got to know where you're walking, because it's pretty tight, and I don't quite have some of those corners down yet.
the other conversations that we've had in the past, I think you've mentioned more than once how when someone becomes blind, mm-hmm. The reliance on their other senses mm-hmm. increases significantly.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought I might use that as sort of a little bit of a segue, because there's an article that I pulled off of, I think it was the Christian Post, one of the Christian news websites that's out there, and it talks about a controversial bishop in New Zealand who says he's planning on building the City of God, which is a complete city with 3 schools and a university. It's called the Destiny Church. It's billed as fundamentalist. It's billed as Pentecostal. Some sort of a new movement. New Zealand really hasn't seen something like this before, the story goes on to say. The fellow's name is Brian Tamaki, refers to himself as a bishop, and what he says is that he heard the voice of God who told him to build this city, and according to the story here from the Fairfax New Zealand News, which is the wire service, this City of God is being constructed in Auckland, and he is telling his believers, because of this voice of God that he heard, to leave behind their families, leave behind their homes, leave behind their jobs, leave everything important in their lives, and take up residency in this new city of God.
Uh-huh.
So I was curious, how do we know when we actually are hearing the voice of God? I mean, if he tells me to go out and buy a Buick this afternoon, should I do it?
Oh, boy. My mind is racing 4 different ways, and I have to dissect which way to go. And the humorous way is where I always want to go first. And
go ahead. It's fun. That's why we have you on. Your sense of humor is marvelous. Go ahead.
I wonder if he had spaghetti the night before. I know if I eat too much spaghetti or lasagna and then go to bed with a full stomach, that always gives me the weirdest dreams.
Well, we're spending so much time in Exodus, and it seems like almost every other or every third verse, mm-hmm. you see the statement about, and God said to Moses.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there was no texting back then, mm-hmm. so you have to assume that it was... Can I assume that Moses was hearing an audible voice?
Because of our culture today, especially here in the United States, I think there's one thing we need to be very aware of, and I don't want to... And that is, we're always under pressure, we're under stress, we wish we were somewhere else. And so the thought of leave the stress, leave the problems, and just go where there's no stress, no problems, no difficulties, where there's peace, and there's all your problems will be taken care of. who doesn't want that?
Sure.
And so many times, because it's leaning towards that inclination of something we all want, or at least a majority of the people in the U.S. are wanting, it's easy to think you're hearing the voice saying, yeah, do it, do it. And therefore, to hear God's voice, First John chapter 4 always says, test every spirit. Test every spirit to know whether it is from God or not. If God says, Roland, build a church, I think it would be advisable to say, okay, God, but I'm going to need some collaborative confirmation of this through family and friends. I'm not just going to go boldly out. Confirmation from the brethren, meaning brothers and sisters, I think is key and crucial. And that's one step in seeing whether something is or is not from God. Second is to see whether circumstances will fall into place for it to happen. Now, that makes me a little nervous because circumstances, they're self-fulfilling prophecies that you can make things happen almost.
True.
So we got to be careful. But if God's not for it, he's not going to let the circumstances occur. That's why the brethren needs to be there. And I think that constant prayer, searching the scriptures, is another thing. Is it really God's will to build a dynamic, big, huge, monstrous place where everyone can be cloistered away from the world? You can read in Acts chapter 2 where they did that, but then you can read in which chapter is it? Chapter 6 where God said, this isn't, he didn't come out and say these exact words, but this isn't good that you're just stuck here. I want you out proclaiming to the world. We got to let the world know about Jesus and the Savior. I said, go to Samaria and the ends of the earth. And so the diaspora came. And God literally used circumstances to force God's people away. And so looking in God's Word can give you an awful lot with patience, and then again, checking with your brothers, your sisters, and your pastors.
Hmm. What about spending hour upon hour, day upon day, week upon week, a lifetime in prayer, and never once hearing any audible sound whatsoever? Is God listening?
I hear that question a lot from people who are blind. Because they're saying, God, please, please, give me back my sight. Please, please. And they don't hear anything. Technically, prayer is not conversation between us and God. Prayer is our conversation to God. There's no place in the Bible that says in prayer God will audibly speak to you. Nowhere.
Well, is there a possibility, Pastor? And sometimes we're too quick to divorce this from...
You know, I think I got to go back to this intern and do some more. Why don't you get Pastor Ostermeyer back in? You are really hitting me.
No. Just wait till you see the next story I pull out of my head.
Oh, God. Yeah. Okay, go ahead.
Look, Rocky, nothing up my sleeve.
Yeah.
Well, where I was going with this is in this world especially, you know, this post-enlightenment world, anything supernatural we're very quick to divorce.
Right.
And the other side of the negative side of that supernatural thing is the influence of Satan and demons.
Mm-hmm.
And if a fellow like this, and I'm not accusing this fellow, I'm just asking, you know, what if this fellow, as he records, is literally hearing a voice telling him to do this, could it be something demonic?
Yeah, absolutely. In 2 Corinthians, I believe it's chapter 13, it indicates that the devil can masquerade as an angel of good. So, sure, why not? And if it helps his greater scheme of keeping more souls in hell, he'll be glad to do that.
So this goes back to why you were saying we have to test these spirits. You have to test to see in the most fundamental form whether they are good spirits or evil spirits.
So if you say to me today, I heard a voice from God, you need to sell your car and give X amount to church, the answer from me will probably be no, because I don't have time to test it.
Well, then how do I figure out what God's will for my life is? If he's not going to tell me, how do I know? You know, do I work in radio, or do I become a house painter? Do I get married, and or do I stay single? Do I, you know, what? How do I know what God's plan for my life is if he won't tell me?
To quote one of my favorite professors, why do you want to know?
Because I don't like the uncertainty of not knowing. Just tell me what you want me to do, and I'll do it.
That question, why do you want to know, always narrows into the question, are you looking for a way to be free from obligation, which means free from the law, or are you needing the comfort of God, which means the gospel?
Oh, okay.
And I, moving away from that question in general, I tend to think that God does not have written in the book of life beyond the name Roland that he will be on KFUO and therefore and be a broadcaster. And if you missed it the first time, he's going to drum his fingers and work hard to get you back there during the next successive years until you finally fulfill his will. That's where there is freedom of choice and free will. Where we don't have free will is when it comes to our turning towards him and doing things spiritually. But when it comes to earthly things, whether I wear black pants, brown pants, or a green shirt, or an orange shirt, or an odd combination thereof, that's not a mandate of God's will. We have freedom there. And therefore also freedom in the occupations we choose. Where God's will is more concerned is more where your heart and attitude will be when you're the accountant, or when you're the radio announcer, or when you're the garbage collector. How are you going to handle yourself, and how will you share and live your life out for him?
505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, KFUO at KFUO.org. Pastor, we've got an email. We'll get to that right after the break because we only have about 30 seconds before we have to take a very short pause here.
Okay.
But before we go into that break, really ultimately the plan that God has for our lives is that we come to the true and saving faith and knowledge of Jesus Christ.
Absolutely, A number one.
And then we live that out in our different vocations as best as we can in the sinful flesh in a God-pleasing way.
That's B number two, correct.
Boy, if it were that simple, I never would have asked.
Well, that's why I asked why you wanted to know.
Pastor Dave Andrus is the Executive Director of Lutheran Blind Mission. He's our guest this morning on Ask the Pastor. We'll be right back after a few short announcements with an email from Eric. Might have to get into, interesting debate going on between a married couple here, wife and a husband, a little bit about law and gospel, something I think Pastor knows a thing or two about. You can join us, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, or like Eric, email us, KFUO at KFUO.org.
Dr. C.F.W. Walther once told his seminary students, "I wish to talk the Christian doctrine into your very heart, enabling you to come forward as living witnesses with a demonstration of the Spirit and of power. I do not want you to be standing in your pulpits like lifeless statues, but to speak with confidence and cheerful courage." Today, Concordia Seminary still strives to do just that.
KFUO Radio salutes our day sponsor on this Wednesday, June 6th, 2012. Today's day sponsors are Vern and Marty Lindfett. Today's day sponsor has made a contribution to KFUO Radio in honor of their 31st wedding anniversary. Once again, we say thank you to Vern and Marty Lindfett of O'Fallon, Illinois, today's KFUO Radio day sponsor.
The Lutheran Doctrine of Vocation is foundational to the variety of topics on the weekend Studio A program. Heard Saturdays from 1 to 3 Central Time, we discuss everything from theology and culture, history, politics, service, and current affairs, and how we as Christians are called not only to live in, but to be an influence upon this world. That's the Studio A program, Saturdays from 1 to 3 Central, right here on KFUO Radio.
Hi, this is Joni Harwell. Have you ever considered becoming a KFUO Day sponsor? It's a great way to honor your loved one's birthday, confirmation, wedding anniversary, or any special event while supporting the worldwide gospel outreach of KFUO. A day sponsorship can be paid in monthly, quarterly payments, or all at one time. Would you please prayerfully consider becoming a KFUO Day sponsor? Just call me or Mary Schmidt at 1-800-844-0524. We can help you select that special day.
The billionaire family from Oklahoma that's giving away a 217-acre campus in Massachusetts has narrowed the potential recipients to two: Grand Canyon University, a Christian school in Arizona, and the North American Mission Board, the Southern Baptist Convention's evangelism arm, are the last groups in the running for the Northfield site. The Green family, owners of Hobby Lobby, will make a decision in the coming weeks. Steve Green says they want to honor the vision of the campus's founder, 19th-century evangelist D.L. Moody, who's buried on the site. And he says,
when you realize that there's not a large presence of evangelicals in the Northeast, it just really seems to be a good opportunity to share a message with the Northeast that really is part of its heritage.
Grand Canyon University would establish a second campus there. The Mission Board would train Baptist missionaries and create a pastoral retreat. I'm Steve Coleman.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
The German Medical Association has made a surprising apology for its role in the Holocaust of World War II. It said, contrary to belief, the doctors weren't forced to participate in experimenting on and killing prisoners, but enthusiastically led the way. It doesn't diminish the horrific reality of the Holocaust, but it has placed responsibility right where it belongs. Someday the same will be required of the American medical community. They've willfully and sometimes enthusiastically committed the heinous act of abortion, recommended the killing, or referred women to abortionists to do the killing. Abortion by the sheer numbers dwarfs the human carnage of World War II. They are both vicious and violent marks on our world's history. By God's grace, we'll wake America to the truth and end the killing.
Check out Life Issues on Facebook and stay more informed than you've ever been.
Welcome back to the Ask the Pastor Hour here on listener-supported KFUO Radio. I'm Roland Lettner. Our guest pastor this morning is Pastor Dave Andrus, who serves as Executive Director of Lutheran Blind Mission. You ready for a quick email, Pastor?
Sure.
Okay, this is from Eric. And he writes in and he says, my wife and I were having an interesting conversation. I love the way that goes. You've had interesting conversations with your wife, too, like I have. So we'll see. We'll have to explore what that may mean. My wife and I were having an interesting conversation that I would like your thoughts on. I said that forgiveness motivates me to do good and try to please God. My wife said that knowing what to do motivates her to do good and try to please God. Do you see the distinction there? Forgiveness motivates him, and knowing what to do, the rules, I guess the law, motivates her to do good and try to please God. Mm-hmm. He says, she seems motivated by the law and me by the gospel. Why the difference? And that was from Eric.
Okay, well...
Now, that was not me. That was a listener who wrote in. I had nothing to do with this.
Okay. three things crossed my mind, and the first one is men are from Mars and women are from Venus.
You betcha.
Mm-hmm. That we are different. No surprise there. Moving back, there does come a point where sometimes it is a motivation of law, motivation of the gospel, and there is that distinction. But humanly speaking, we do... I'm thinking of two people in particular, my sister and my wife.
And my sister, she just likes to know what's point A, B, C, D, and I'll do it. And it's not that she's motivated by the law. If anything, you would actually go from the theological, because I've thought about this with my sister. She's a little older than me, and she's not listening to the program, so I can feel more free to talk about her. And she's very much a boomer, and boomers love to hear, what do I have to do? They're very practically minded. And one would say theologically they are motivated from the third use of the law, which means once we are forgiven, we're free now to serve the Lord from a thankful heart. And I think that really describes my sister. She's not doing it out of guilt or obligation, but more out of a peace and a joy. God loves me. I'll do whatever I can to serve him. So even though it's the what to do is the motivation, if you dig deeper, it's because the heart is at peace. Some people very much, though, are of the other ilk, that they really, even as Eric mentions, because I'm forgiven, wow, I want to do something. And I can think of many times when my wife has done something for me, and it's like, man, you did that? And it motivates me to want to do more for her. And I think it really, my guess is, Eric, you are both coming from the gospel. It's just from different aspects of the gospel that have been shown or expressed. Is that clear as mud?
At first, you know, much like you, my first thought went to maybe a little bit of the humorous side, mm-hmm. where I saw that as sort of a, you know, the old light beer commercial, tastes great, less filling, tastes great.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
both.
It can be.
It's mm-hmm. both at the same time. And
it
that was, and that was the punchline, I guess, of that commercial, was
yeah.
it's both. Why are we fighting about such things?
Yeah.
So the law motivates, the gospel motivates, but does one motivate better than the other, or is it more appropriate to be motivated by one over the other?
Well, the law can only... Well, yes, the law does motivate, but the question is it out of fear or out of direction because you are forgiven? If it's out of fear, I heard one pastor comment, yeah, it's easy to raise money. You just got to preach a lot of law that you ought to and you should, and it's your obligation, and you can raise a lot of money, but the question is, are you doing it from the right angle, and are you really motivating the people to do so from a grateful heart? That's one of those difficult things. And really, I the analogy, I mean, you drove your car to work today, didn't you, Roland?
Yes, I did.
Can you wrap your mind around the cylinders going around and around and around at 1,000 RPMs? That's revolutions per minute. 1,000 of them in a minute. That's spinning several times. That's at idle. So if you're going down the highway at 25,000 RPMs, you're doing probably a spin. You're doing probably 100 spins every second. Can you wrap your mind around that?
Can't do it.
Yeah. And so it is with the gospel law dynamic. It shows us our sin. It convicts us. We look to Jesus. We're forgiven, and therefore we're motivated to say thank you. And how do we know how to say thank you? But the law comes back to show us how to be thankful. But yet at the same time, it shows us. It's almost like that car engine spinning so fast that when we're walking in a good faith relationship with Jesus, it is really hard to see the dynamic. Well, you see them both at once. You see them both at once at work. And I think that's really what you were seeing here with this couple. Forgiveness motivation and yet direction motivation from the law.
Well, what should young Eric do? Should he go to his wife and say, you should be following the gospel. I have spoken.
Sounds like a law statement to me.
Ooh, okay. So what do you do? How do you talk with someone who is motivated by the law, perhaps even out of fear that perhaps it's the wrong motivation that they are taking from Scripture?
Well, when you're having that light beer, because either it tastes great or it's less filling, of which I don't agree with either of those statements, but anyway, that's another story.
That sure is, yeah.
At the at, not in the heat of the conversation, but when you can actually talk well with a person, okay, you've got that direction, what if? And that's the if you're dealing with a person that's really motivated by the law, the what if game is fun. Well, what if you can't do it? How will you be? Will you be content or will you feel guilty? If you feel guilty, then you're motivated out of a true law negative orientation. But if you immediately say what if and you can't do it, well, I know God will forgive me. Well, then obviously the gospel is there and the law was there more as a direction of how to say thank you. And that's really what Eric needs to do, is understand, you know, how do you know, Eric, how to, if you're motivated from the gospel and out of forgiveness, how do you know what to do? I mean, you have the law involved in your life. The question is it foremost in your mind as it might be in your wife, or is it more in the background, where hers is more in the foreground, but the gospel is in the background? And I think the what-if game can help maybe bring that forth.
You know, the thing that strikes me, Pastor Andrus, is that the gospel can be a very terrifying thing. Because when you look at Galatians 5 and it says, you know, in Christ you have been set free. Well, you're free and your instinct is to say, well, now what? Tell me what to do. Well, that's running back to the law, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's interesting, even to pick up that example, there are stories, not everywhere, but there are some stories from the Civil War time when the South lost, and I don't want to get into that argument or concern if there are people out there that are frustrated. I was just in the Deep South last weekend to work with an outreach center, and I could still feel they didn't like it that I'm a Yankee. So that's why I'm sensitive to that. But when the war was done and the statement was slaves are free, a lot of them just stayed there. Stayed right where they were. Especially because most of the slaves were working with a farmer, just one or two people with the farmer. Well, I don't know what else to do, so I'll keep on working with you if that's okay. You know, so being set free, just as you say, you know, what do? But you do what you, well, the slaves were told what to do. You pick the cotton or you plow the field. Well, he knew how to do that, but now he was doing it from a different motivation. It was a motivation of thanks for letting me be here, and we'll work this out together. But he stayed because he didn't know where else to go or what else to do. And so it is when we have the gospel, we turn back to the law because it tells us and guides us what to do to say thank you.
But the freedom that Galatians 5 speaks of is when you go out there and you give it your best reverent guess as to what to do and you fail, there is forgiveness. You don't have to be afraid of trying.
Well, now, see, now we're moving to a different subject.
Oh, okay. I didn't even realize that. Wow.
Yeah. And that is, there are people who are afraid of failure, of doing things right. The person who is the perfectionist, who has to have everything right. Now, that's a different motivation. And I could be called on the carpet. Well, I'm not called on the carpet. And maybe one of our brothers out there or in the ministry could help me, but I tend to think that's more of a, not a law gospel orientation thing, but just a personal, how are you directed type of thing, of a personality. That one, and there's pluses to that, by the way, as well as minuses. The perfectionist ends up to be an extremely good bookkeeper, accountant, because they are always making sure everything's done right and correct and all the numbers line up. And you want somebody like that as your bookkeeper. You want someone like that working on your computers. You want someone like that working on your electrical in your house. But when it comes to other aspects, it can be a problem, and it can paralyze people from actually doing things. And so that's more of a human nature, which can go to an extreme, which has a plus or a positive, and a negative, a strength or a weakness.
505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, KFUO at KFUO.org. All right, Psalm 14 and Psalm 53 both have something in common. That is, it talks about the fool who says there is no God. He says in his heart, I guess even nowadays, probably more prevalent than just in his heart, the new atheists are out there, and they're constantly talking about how there is no God.
Mm-hmm.
And you're familiar, I don't know if you ever heard of the magician combo Penn and Teller?
Mm-mm, no, I don't.
You haven't? Okay. Well, they do some, well, not quite as popular as they used to be 20 years ago, but they had sort of an interesting magical show that they would do, sort of Hollywood's, you know, favorite magicians, the big Las Vegas magic show kind of thing.
Okay.
And Penn Jillette, who's the bigger guy, if people know who I'm talking about, you've got Teller, who's the little guy, and you've got Penn Jillette. He's a real big guy. He's like 7 foot tall, big husky guy.
Okay.
Penn Jillette is a very outspoken, but at least conversational atheist, and he has a brand new book out called God - No! Exclamation point. All right. And he was at a Barnes & Noble doing a book signing, and what I've got is a story where it details the conversation this reporter had with Penn Jillette. And the headline is, "You can't be moral and believe in God."
You say that again, you can't.
You can't be moral. You cannot be moral and believe in God.
Can't be moral and believe in God.
Yeah, it says that in his book, he talks about this intense debate that's been raging since essentially the beginning of time between people who embrace the notion of a higher power and those who don't. And among the subjects discussed in his book, Jillette talks about how Christians, among other things, claim that atheists can't be good without God. And he says, well, I'm a living example. I do good things all the time, and I'm an atheist. Well, I guess the first question is, can you be good without God?
I've had many people come to my office when I was a parish pastor and ask that question. And I listened hard to what they were saying, because even as Penn Jillette comments, people do a lot of good things, and I can think of several people who've given away money and helped people, opened up their home, and they're doing good, humane things. I think we in Christianity have done a disservice. No, that's wrong. We in Christianity have confused our language, and we speak theological language, and we're not speaking average day street language to help people understand what we're trying to say. When we say we can't do good, we should quantify it to say spiritual good. We can do humane things, great things, but doesn't mean that that is spiritually good. And too often we talk about it in just general terms, we don't do good. Well, I kissed my wife this morning. I said goodbye. I did several nice things for my family. And that's what this gentleman's Penn Jillette?
Penn Jillette is his name.
Jillette. Yeah. Is trying to get to that does a lot of good things. And there's a lot of people who do good things. The dilemma is when we think that will translate into the economy of spiritual good, that's where we fall short.
It seems from the article that Mr. Jillette's got two burrs under his saddle.
Mm-hmm.
And the first one is that he doesn't like the fact that Christians say that only God is the arbiter of what is good. You know, he likes to say, I can do that myself. And matter of fact, he goes on to say that it is very important to contemporary atheists that there is a morality that exists, but that exists outside of any Godhead. And one of the pull quotes here is, morality existing outside of God is pretty important for atheists. Morality only being within God, and this is the important bit here, morality only being within God, I think, is part of the problem we have with some Muslims. And he says, you see, the atheist morality is universal. The Godhead morality changes with which Godhead you're speaking of.
That's interesting. That is interesting. The dilemma is then, okay, Penn, how do the atheists determine what is moral? And that's a moving target based on the people. That's been the advantage of having it as God and letting God speak from what book, because then it becomes more objective. I think his point is well taken in the sense that morality can be a moving target depending on who you're talking to or depending on what God you believe in. And that has been a problem in the centuries past, certainly. But you got a better chance of a consistency by being objective and making it God rather than humanity.
Now, the reason I pull up this story is because of the next section of text I'm going to get into here, because it relates back to the email that Eric had sent in about being motivated by the gospel versus being motivated by the law.
This is a good thing. You're a good host. You're tying things together
this. Thank you.
Yeah.
Penn Jillette is famous for saying one thing and saying one thing frequently, and that is, you know, he says that Christians argue that one cannot be good without the Lord. But he said it's quite possible to argue the opposite, that one cannot be a moral person with God. And he says, because rather than doing good for the sake of doing good, you do good because you're afraid that God is watching you and he won't like the fact that you're not doing it.
Well, that definitely shows his relationship with God, if he does have one, that he's afraid that God will be angry with him. And he doesn't understand the gospel at all. And somebody who doesn't know God, that he's a loving God, who forgives them, obviously is going to come from that angle that God only dispenses the law and morality and we need to be afraid of him. That's a law-based statement. And he speaks very true to that side of the coin.
Yeah, he goes on to say, my definition for my children, for instance, is that I don't want my son not to hit my daughter when I'm watching because he's afraid of being punished. So you see, the whole idea is, I don't rob banks because there's a cop out there who will punish me.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that I don't rob banks because it's the wrong thing to do. And he says that's bad morality. He says that's a false form of doing good.
The common word that I hear bounced around a lot now is integrity. You do something just because. And so that's basically what he is speaking of is, you do the right thing because it's the right thing. That's what makes you a person of integrity.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. So it's not that Christianity doesn't do that. It does. But he obviously has only heard a limited side of it.
505-7850-1-800-730-2727. To the phones we go. Larry, good morning. You're up next.
Good morning, Roland. Good morning, Pastor Ray and Grace.
Hi, Larry.
Quick comment about what we as Lutherans believe concerning grace, and I think we can tie it into works. You know, if you look at Ephesians 2:8-9, our salvation is a gift. So everything flowing from the cross, everything God doing for us, is called in theology monergism. God has done it all, performed the baptism in his name, and on and so forth. So if we look at that, we look at the cross where our grace is, where he died for us, and he bestows that grace upon us, he's also responsible then for what we do as far as our works. Everything flows from that also. Wouldn't you agree, Pastor? We try to put this burden on ourselves that we have to perform under the law, but in reality, that is God grants us the works that we do also. It's all monergistic. If it's not, then if we feel like we're contributing, it's synergism, and synergism is a sin. How would you respond to that, Pastor?
Well, I mostly agree with you, Larry. The problem with it would be is when you hang up, if you then turn around and beat your wife.
She's not here.
There's always a loophole, isn't there?
And you are correct But sometimes people have used those words to justify then what they do wrong. And that, well, you know, I'm, all the good comes from God, and therefore if I'm doing good, it's all God. And if it's bad, oh yeah, it's my sinful nature. And it takes them off the hook. And so it's there is a tension there where we are involved. Philippians 2:12, I think, is the verse that says, work out your own salvation with fear and trembling. Paul doesn't let us completely off the hook. We are accountable, one might say, and that's what the law is all about, to show us our sin and call us accountable again.
Would you say that work out your, would you say that's the best translation, or would something on the lines of remain steadfast in the word? I don't know what the original, I don't know what the original Greek is there.
I don't.
But I can see where people would get hung up on that verse saying, well, this is something I have to do to please God.
Well, and again, that's why I brought up the verse, because you're coming from a very gospel-oriented point of view, and that's great. But I need to pull you back to the middle to have a little bit of the law there, so there's a tension. Whenever we break the tension of law and gospel and emphasize one side or the other, we run a danger. Run a danger of either, if it's on the law side, of being so fearful, tied up, guilty, that we won't feel forgiveness and we'll be buried under that. Or if we run the gospel side real heavily, well then, you know, it's all good, I'm forgiven, and there's no responsibility or accountability. We need that tension.
Right. And you know what, Pastor? I think that's where Psalm 51 is so wonderful.
Ah, yes. Yes, yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Because it takes you through the whole gamut, doesn't it?
It does. It really does. David does a marvelous, I shouldn't say David, God through David lays out for us a marvelous picture of how it is. It's a both and once we are saved. It isn't God just working through us and we just sit idly there in our chair and, ooh, I'm glad you're doing all this, God, because then I don't have to worry about it. No,
I think,
we do need to worry
after,
about it.
I think Paul said it best in Romans 7:27.
Mm-hmm.
That I want to do, I don't do, and that I don't want to do, I do. So he knows he's saved by grace, but he knows he still has a sinful nature at the same time.
That's right. That's right.
So, thank
and
you.
And the new nature, which is the Holy Spirit working within us, starts to do the good, and that is part of us. Indeed.
Pastor Dave Andrus, our guest this morning on Ask the Pastor, serves as Executive Director of Lutheran Blind Mission. Very quickly, Pastor, how do folks get in touch and support Lutheran Blind Mission?
We are on the website at blindmission.org, and our local St. Louis number is a new one, 544-3100.
Thank you, my friend. All the best, especially in your new digs there for Lutheran Blind Mission.
Thank you very much, and good to be with you.
Take care.
Thank you.
All right, guys, that's it for today. We're back tomorrow with more Bible study in Exodus 18, more Ask the Pastor. We'll see you then. Bye-bye.
Listen Monday through Friday at this same time on The Bible Study. The Bible Study is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is needed for The Bible Study to continue. Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can contact us on the web at kfuo.org. Download programs from the Bible Study Archives at kfuo.org. The Bible Study is underwritten by Concordia Seminary, St. Louis.
Hi, I'm Pastor Matt Youngblood Clark from Emmanuel in Waterloo, Illinois.
And I am Pastor Jolly John Lekumsky from St. Paul's in New Athens and Trinity in Darmstadt, and we welcome you to listen to Wrestling with the Basics.
Matt, let go of me, man. No, it's not real wrestling. We're just talking about Bible issues.
No.
Oh, 9:05 Saturday mornings, 8:50 a.m. KFUO.
How would you like to enhance your legacy to your family and continue your legacy supporting God's mission through KFUO with a planned gift? A planned gift will enable you to increase your annual income, eliminate capital gains tax on assets, and receive a significant tax deduction. You can even list KFUO as a designated beneficiary of your life insurance policy or IRA. Call today, ask for Joni, and explore all the benefits of planned giving to KFUO.
We are where you are. KFUO Radio, Clayton, St. Louis. KFUO HD, streaming live at KFUO.org.
AP Radio News. I'm John Belmont. Did you see the major New York Times piece about the U.S. and Israel supposedly working together to sneak a damaging computer worm into Iran's nuclear plant? That's the kind of thing that has some Republicans saying the Obama administration is orchestrating leaks of classified information to make the president look good as we get closer to Election Day. Our Rita Foley reports the White House is denying it.
The allegations come from Republican Senator John McCain.
This puts American lives in danger, revealing our most highly classified operations both in cyber war and in drones.
McCain gave CBS this morning an example of the kind of information he says is being leaked.
The doctor who helped us with eliminating bin Laden, he was identified and shouldn't have been. He's now just been sentenced to 33 years in prison.
The White House refers to McCain by name and calls his allegations grossly irresponsible. Rita Foley, Washington.
Defense Secretary Leon Panetta probably ruffling some feathers in Pakistan. He says drone attacks will continue as long as the U.S. needs to defend itself against terrorists. He made the comments in India, Pakistan's long-standing arch-rival. The U.S. economy isn't likely to slip back into a recession despite recent signs that the recovery has lost momentum. That's the word from billionaire investor Warren Buffett speaking at the 25th anniversary dinner of the Economic Club of Washington.
I think it's very low unless events in Europe develop in some way that spill over here big time.
Speaking of Europe, the new socialist government in France is working to lower the retirement age by 2 years to 60 for certain workers. Wall Street, the Dow is up more than 200 points. Space Shuttle Enterprise, surrounded by a flotilla of boats, is making its way to its new home on the west side of Manhattan. The test orbiter traveled up the Hudson River from Jersey City past the Statue of Liberty this morning. This is AP Radio News.